Welcome to the Power of the Purse podcast, the only show connecting women professionals to their peers. This isn't just about money. This is about life. And now the host of the Power of the Purse podcast, Lynn S. Evans.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lynn S. Evans, and I am the host of Power of the Purse podcast. There was a time in my life not too long ago when I believed three things about money. One, women are not supposed to talk about or be included in any conversations about money. Two, women don't have the natural ability to understand anything about money. And three, men know best how to manage money. And those truths I made up about money guided me for years, until I realized money was not a foreign language or some other obscure academic exercise, and it was something I could not only understand but teach to other women. Too many times, I've heard stories from women who ought to know better but didn't, until they were forced to, because of divorce, widowhood, job loss, or the approach of retirement. My mission is to help women reduce their financial illiteracy and develop a healthy relationship with money. With that in mind, my guest today is Kelly Hoey, and she is a very interesting person. I have several biographies of her, but I'm just going to say, first of all, that she is currently, and probably most importantly, the author of a book called Build Your Dream Network. And in addition to that, we have all the other information about being on Forbes list, Fast Company's list, Business Insider, and Inc. And it goes on and on and on. And all that's wonderful. Her career highlights, as she said them to me, that she passed three bar exams. She moved her career to New York City in 1998, and she was the first president of a global business network for women. And then the other biggie was publishing your first book. So, welcome, Kelly.
Thank you so much for having me, Lynn. I love that introduction.
Yeah, it was unique, I'm sure. But
well, your introduction to this podcast as well, in terms of our, I want to say, the limitations we place on ourselves, that are sometimes so irrational.
And mostly, they are things that we don't even think about. We just assume them. They're so much a part of our psyche that it's unexamined. And it just is that like that. And people don't even think about it.
Yeah. And I mean, there's like so much that goes on in life. And I don't know, I was sort of thinking as I was listening to your introduction, it's like, yeah, why would any of us want to learn about plumbing? You know, isn't it easier just to have somebody else do it than?
Yes.
but aside all the home and garden television shows and, you know, that those big old aisles at Home Depot or Lowe's that we can, you know, go through and do it ourselves. There's some things it's just like, you know what, I just want to delegate it to somebody else. And, you know, I think I agree with you wholeheartedly. Unfortunately, too many women have done just that, and that has put us in a very precarious place.
And I also think, too, to your point, I think a lot of women do not even consider that the idea of understanding their own personal finances is an option. It's generally presumed that husband, father, or some other person in their life will handle it. You know, my concern is there's nothing wrong with that if you are an active participant. But when you just defer everything to someone else and take no interest in it, that's when, if any of these life situations occur, man, does it come up and bite you in the butt.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So that's why I'm saying you just, it's okay to do that. And that's why financial planners exist. But on the other hand, it's really important for women to get a better understanding of what this is all about. So that's my big mission.
I love this mission. And I'm, you know, thinking of my own situation, God, when I really became informed about finances, you know, I want to say financial planner, as you noted in my introduction, I moved to New York in 1998. I was practicing law in Toronto and then moved to New York and continued practicing law until I ventured off into all these other things. But I still have, you know, the equivalent of the 401k in Canada. So I'll leave it with, you know, a financial planner up there. And when I became really sort of money savvy a couple of years ago, and I called this guy to sort of say, hey, let's look at the portfolio. He was just, whoa, what has happened to you? And it was really great because in some ways, you know, how much more interesting for a financial planner than to have an educated consumer that they're dealing with so that together you can make a better plan rather than just someone sort of nodding and agreeing, to what they roll out.
I totally agree. And I think that's why I've often said that what I really want women to do is become a partner with me in this. I mm-hmm. don't want them to continue that ignorance. Don't just right. shift it over to me like you would do with somebody else. I want you to understand it. And to some degree, you know, I think it's a good thing. I'm not saying I should be a doctor and learn everything there is to know about cardiology. But when I go and talk to my cardiologist, I like to have a conversation with her that makes sense. And she right. knows, you know, that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying yeah. that we should all be brilliant in the subject, but.
Oh, God, can you imagine?
No.
Oh, my God. Can imagine the boring dinner party conversations if that was the case. Oh,
well,
no.
There's plenty of guys that have very boring dinner conversations about the latest stock they just purchased and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, enough about that. Let's talk about you. Build your dream network. I love the idea of that is just very engaging to me because we've all gone through our how to network programs offered by the Chamber of Commerce. And then you go to the networking events and you stand there with your packet of cards in one pocket, like you were taught to do, and you get the other cards and put them in the other pocket. And then you go home at the end of the day and you say, all right, so what? I met all these people, none of whom have any relevance to my life. So let's talk about the dream network. How is that different than the network we get from the Chamber of Commerce meetings? I don't want to disparage the Chambers of Commerce.
No, because your dream network may be in the Chamber
yes,
of Commerce.
There we go.
But it may not be. My problem really to kind of take the step back is we have a notion around what networking is and when we need to do it. And you know, there is a parallel to sort of being investment or financial savvy or comfortable is we always sort of think of networking as something as being in a place of need, of somehow feeling powerless, and we associate it with exactly the type of activity that you described. Whereas I'm sort of like, no. Like, how day in, day out are you making like smart human decisions? How day in, day out are you engaging with people in your network? Now, when you're going to understand that you need to go out and engage with a wider audience, the worst place to start is with the activity or the networking tactic. So running off to a Chamber of Commerce with business cards in your pocket, like, mm-hmm. You have nothing to ground it in. Like, why am I doing this? I mean, put it in the parallel of financial goals. Like, you know, running to your financial advisor and saying, put money in the market. It's like, well, what's the goal? Is it a short-term goal? Is it a long-term goal? Do you have any particular, needs or wants? Like, do you have some preferences on the types of stock? Like, what are you looking for? So, you know, like with networking and the way I think about it, about building a network as opposed to schmoozing at an event or a party is, all right, what is it that what's your goal? What is it that you're needing to do? Are you looking like I was at one point, advancing my legal career? Was it like I was at another point in my life? Is it changing jobs? You know, which parts of an existing network are you looking to tap into to help you achieve your goal? So that's the first part is like, okay, what is it you want to achieve in that bigger kind of picture way and maybe some specifics as well. Then two, who's the right person to help you? Or who's the right group to help you? So you got to identify like who are, truly put it in marketing terms, who's your target market? Who's your right audience? And it's not just, oh, gee, Lynn's the person to help me. It's like, yeah, but what's going on in her life? Or what's going on in their life? What's the dynamic? It might be the right person, but the wrong timing. And once you sort of figure out what your goal and who you need to target or who you need to engage with, then figure out the tactic. You know, so you know, to being told when people are like, oh, here's sort of the busy work of networking, and you should just go to a chamber of commerce and, you know, be sure you shake your hand this way and have your business cards that way. You know, I just sit there and I think you're just setting people up for frustration.
Yes.
Because you can't ground it in anything. Like, why is this the right group for me to be in?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And if I understand what you just said, let me try to go back and put this into a context that you mentioned before when you said you used the term to build the dream network. And I'm saying versus networking as we know
right.
it to be. So
right.
in order for you to build your dream network, you have to figure out what your target market is. And then who is it that can help you to do that? So how do you identify who is that person?
Well, you know what I was going to say is probably how you network within having a dream network.
Mm-hmm.
So there's probably two pieces on this. One is, you know, again, go back to, you know, sort of saying that the problematic part with networking is we think we need to do it at a time of need. And there was a point in my life where that was the case, when I decided I needed to make a career change, and that was from practicing law and I decided I want to stop practicing law and want to get into law firm management. And I realized I had a few connections who could help me make this career change, because I quickly discovered these were word of mouth jobs, not ones that were advertised by recruiters or on websites. But I didn't have the full robust dream network to do it. So first of all, I needed to figure out, all right, who are these? All right, here's who these people are and here's where they hang out. I now need to get to know them and I need to understand what goes on in their world. Then once I had done that, then I could start building deeper relationships with individuals, which ultimately helped me, you know, kind of crack open and make that career transition. So there is an element of, hey, how do you show up every single day so that people want to help you? I mean, thankfully, when I was making that career change, I had stayed in touch with former colleagues in Toronto who had previously made the same change. So I could actually reach out to them and say, God, I want to follow the same career path you have. You know, can you jump on a call and help me out? Because I had stayed in touch with them, they took the call.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I had just ignored them for 10 years and been the poor, you know, colleague, non-collaborative, you know, jerk of a person in the office, they may have never responded at all. So there's that kind of element to it. Like, how are you building relationships all the time? And then once you decide, you know, okay, I got a particular need, how are you tapping in and engaging those people? Because there's always the stuff about us, what we need, what we want, you know, here's whatever. And then there's like the kind of hold on a minute here, you know, why does that person want to help you? And by the way, what's going on in their life? Is this the right time to ask them?
And speaking of that, how do you go about maintaining a relationship with some of these people? Most people, I think today, could have over 500 connections on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you go about making sure that you are connecting with people on a regular basis so that you're not connecting with them only when you need something?
Right, right. Well, I want to say you've sort of hit on it. I think there is this element that we all have these, I'm going to say, much more diverse and light touch and vast networks than we ever did before, because of these platforms that enable us to connect or stay connected with people. And how do you turn something like that into something more than, you know, a digital Rolodex, for people who remember those? but how do you turn it into more than that? Well, you know, one of the highest and best use of social platforms is watching and listening, not being the blabbermouth. You know, and I'm laughing a little bit inside my head because, you know, I post, you know, an update every single day, Monday through Friday, on LinkedIn. But, you know, there's an element of like watching and listening. And how do you stay in touch with people? Gosh, congratulate them on a work anniversary when you see that pop up on LinkedIn. Wish them a happy birthday if that comes up. You know, see and watch and notice. If you saw something that came up, I don't know, in your community, and you say, God, I remember the first time the two of us went to, you know, watch our kids play Little League. Well, you know, why not just say to someone, you know, that real human thought or notion to be able to say, God, this, it's probably going to be feel odd getting this, you know, note from me, but I was passing by such and such and remembered the time we had to watch our kids in the first little League game and how pathetic they were, you know, whatever the story is, right? Like those, like we're craving that. And instead of, you know, defaulting to the, I want to say the mechanics and the logistics of these social platforms, look at them as this just immense ability and this immense bounty to be really, really, really human. And the more you can do that, God, like, you know, people, like I said, they're craving it. And you can really put yourself back into a relationship by watching and listening and noticing. But, you know, I want to stress again, go back to, you know, how helpful and you know, kind and engaged were you with the person before? Or what was the initial encounter? You know, if you were the jerk at the party and just happened to get someone's card and they foolishly, like, connected with you on LinkedIn, you know, kind of, like, take an assessment. Take your own pulse or think about, all right, you know, you hate to sort of say you never know. But you never know in life these days when and how someone's going to come back and be helpful. I've had interns who have come back and be helpful. I have had former colleagues come back and be helpful. And I've had extraordinary people who I've helped out, you know, yeah, fallen, you know, completely radio silent. So you just don't know anymore. So I just take the path of be decent to everybody and watch and listen how you can be of service or of help to them.
Well, let me be the devil's advocate now. Let me say that LinkedIn is probably the default social media platform that most people in business would use. So mm-hmm. Let's say I have 2,000 people in my LinkedIn, whatever you want to call it, I was going to say,
yeah.
group, okay?
Yeah.
For lack of a better term. Okay. Now, practically speaking, I'm not going to go through those 2,000 people on a regular basis, even if I did one a day. I'm mm-hmm. 3 or 4 mm-hmm. years. I can't do that.
Right.
So how do we go back and isolate the people that maybe would be in what you said, your target market?
Right.
Is there some way to just kind of footnote them and say, these are the people that I have to stay in touch with because they're important to me?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You can obviously, like, create lists or do things like that, you know, find ways to say, hey, you know, these right now, these are, you know, 10 people based on, you know, my experiences with them, or they were great mentors, or, you know, they've always been helpful. So I want to make sure they're up to date. We can't restrict our networking to, you know, one platform or one activity, because, you know, think about your own life. You're complex and you're doing things in different places and leaving little bits of yourself in terms of engagement and insight. So, you know, LinkedIn is just one place. But the other, you know, great part about it, Lynn, is it's a great place to passively, in a sort of passive in a non-aggressive way, stay top of mind with other people. And that's why, you know, Monday through Friday, like clockwork, 7:30, 7:45 in the morning, I post an update on LinkedIn. And I post an update that relates to something, yes, that I care about in terms of business, in terms of a topic that I want to be seen and viewed in as the expert. But I post it, And my intention in posting the information isn't like, hey, look, everybody, I wrote another article for Forbes. I'd like you to read it. Like, it's more like, here's, you know, here's this post. Like, here is the insight. Here is why it is helpful. Here's why this may help you. And by the way, it's my latest, you know, post on Forbes or my latest article on whatever. But there's always that, like, hey, how can I help my network be better or help in terms of helping them out doing their job? How can I give them an insight that may help them get a next customer or investor or whatever it may be? And yes, it helps me, mm-hmm. but it also helps them. And then that's the way I really do that, putting out that really helpful information and putting it out with that intention. That's the biggest way, whether it's on LinkedIn or my newsletter or those things. That's the biggest way that I kind of keep that light touch and try and stay top of mind with a network that keeps growing.
What would you say is the most interesting person you've ever met through networking?
Ooh. So, you know what? Let me think. I sat on an airplane from Mexico City to Dallas, and the guy next to me was a fearful flyer who liked to chat on the plane. I never talk to anyone on planes because I like look at it as my time to zone out. No one can find me. Like this, it's kind of like being in the doctor's office. No one talks to anybody, and no one looks at anyone. And I'm like, yippee! You know, like I could, I've got silence. And this guy wanted to chat away, and he was a roadie with a heavy metal band. Ooh. And I was like, God, but, and he'd been on the road for approximately 4 months and he was finally getting home to his family. And it was really fascinating because I'm like, when in my life am I going to, you know, stumble across someone like that? And then, you know, when I think of other really, you know, oh God, I mean, it's sort of like all the time I have these great opportunities to, you know, if you just sort of take an interest in someone. But, you know, one example I often give in terms of, you know, you get the mix of the old networking and the new networking and the possibilities that it opens is because of Twitter, I met best-selling author Tom Peters. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason why I love digital platforms is, yes, it's this point we've already talked about, that you can stay in touch with a lot more people. You can stay in touch with a lot more people from a lot, you know, kind of broader aspects of our lives. You know, you think back in the day when you had a pen pal, if your pen pal moved and didn't send a forwarding address, you're kind of out of luck, you know, stay in touch with pen pal. But now, you know, we've got these other tools so that, you know, 8 years later, a former colleague can reach out to you and you can reignite, you know, positive relationships.
Yeah.
So Tom and I, started, you know, kind of following each other and being friends on Twitter. And, you know, before a platform like that, when would I meet someone like him? Like, yeah. I don't know, yeah. A sycophant at a book signing? Like, that's no thank you. I can't imagine that would have turned out well. And instead, you know, we started talking and chatting on Twitter. But the point, you know, part of all the stories, besides, you know, the opportunity to meet someone interesting, it was taking the truly human rules of engagement and putting them on a new platform. Because Tom and I have now become friends because of a very much a mutual interest and generous conversation, very much like you'd have at a, you know, like a cocktail party. It's just happened on Twitter. Mm-hmm. We have met for coffee in person, and that is like solidified our friendship. And you know, I consider him a great friend and a great mentor. But that whole process is probably, as I, you know, repeat, it's taken like 8 years. It's not just because I can follow Tom and, ooh, yeah, all of a sudden he's a friend. Mm-hmm. It's this person that you build that relationship. You build that, you know, that dream relationship. And we're just fortunate now for all our downsides. You know, what social platforms do is they democratize access. And if you are that generous, listening, considerate networker who is as much interested in somebody else's success, that platform for possibility, you know, of who can help you reach your dreams is so much bigger than it ever was before.
It is. And I think that what you said about democratizing of the availability of people is where I have seen some significant differences too, in the sense that I probably would not have gotten to certain people had I not had the opportunity to connect with them on LinkedIn. And just the fact that they are, everybody is your peer, at that point on LinkedIn and everything else. So it's wonderful to have the opportunity, but I still think I find myself, I don't want to say screening because that's not really the right word, but really looking at people and saying, is this someone that I want to connect with?
Bingo.
And yeah, so, no. You know, you still have the ability to be able to discriminate as to who is in your network, even though it's fair. And I think, and obviously in reverse, that happens as well.
Well, it's understanding with these platforms, just like a chamber of commerce, right? Just like any other networking venue, when we all have access to it, doesn't mean we use it in the same way. And just because I've had a positive experience with someone or some group doesn't mean necessarily mean you will as well. And I think you're also hitting on a really important part of this, Lynn, when someone reaches out, like how are they reaching out to make that connection or, you know, follow up or remind, you know, where you maybe had met before. But we still sit there and think, well, how else do I know? How else, you know, very tribal, how else are we possibly connected? You know, is there a mutual interest? Do we have some mutual connections? Because someone else being able to vouch for you, you know, it may be a person or it may be an institution. Oh, we worked for the same company. We went for the same school. There's still those very tribal, primal, you know, kind of Neanderthal brain friend or foe things going on, which is also why I say to people, like, this is why, you know, who you portray yourself online needs to be who you are in person, because all these things should seamlessly flow together. And you need to, this is why it is valuable to make connections. This is why it is valuable to put down that you belong to these associations or trade groups or chambers of commerce or your alumni, because that, as you know, our primal human brain, we're immediately going boom, boom, boom. Oh, right. Okay. I can trust this person.
Yes.
I want to step in and be connected. And when we see very little information and we see a little outlined head with blue behind it and no face, we're like, whoa, what is this, right?
Yes, you're absolutely right. It's almost like an automatic no.
Oh, it is for me. If someone does a LinkedIn request to connect, which is the auto kind of like, hey, let's connect on LinkedIn, like the sort of the auto one, that the auto response that LinkedIn has, and there's no headshot, or it's, you know, the picture taken 30 feet back of them on their sofa or something, I'm like, you know what, this is really easy, delete. I don't waste any time. Bye bye.
Gee, like, I thought it was just me. Okay.
No. And why? Because this is also part of it. Why are you making it work for somebody else?
Yes.
If you're the one who is reaching out because you do have something that you're seeking to achieve and you're hoping that this person is going to be one of, you know, the facilitators to making it happen, make it easy for them to help you. And showing up and sort of, you know, hey, let's connect on LinkedIn, you know, the same way when people show up at our inbox or on our back door saying, hey, I need a job. And you're like, oh, good God, right? Like, I don't know where to start to help you. So make it easy for people to say, got it. I can help you. I got a connection, you know, and part of that is how you ask, but part of it is how you've made people feel about you.
Now, I don't want you to name names here. All right. But
darn, I was hoping for that part of the show.
You could if you want to. It's up to you. But I'm not asking you to. My question is, what was the most disappointing connection you've ever made? Somebody you had this fabulous expectation about, could not wait to meet him or her, and then you found, oh, it's not a very nice person. Did that ever happen?
Yeah. I mean, I'm, you know, a couple things running through my mind. In one situation, it was when I was making a career change and someone said, you need to meet this person. But thankfully, you know, so I would say my network was very generous in not only making introductions, you know, once I sort of started to build this network to make this career change, they're not only generous in making introductions, they were extraordinarily helpful in kind of giving me the lay of the land before the introduction was made. Good. And there was one person, they said, we're going to make this introduction. You have to meet her because she is a linchpin in this whole area of the profession you want to get into. But I will warn you now, she can be difficult. They were kind to say that the person would, like, you know, it's like it was painful. It was awful, but it was like, and then it was like hilarious because people later said, oh yeah, she speaks well of you. And I'm like, really? After a 15-minute call where I felt, you know, that I'd been reduced to, you know, a gnat. So that was one that was like just strange and odd and awful and, you know, all those kinds of things. So again, that's why I sort of say, like, you know, to be able to have extraordinary people, you know, make yourself the extraordinary person that other people want to be helpful to.
And maybe that's it.
Yeah. Like, rather than saying surround yourself with extraordinary people, you know, people will help you and step out of their way and extend themselves for you if you have been someone who has been there for them. And, you know, I can't, you know, stress that enough. Maybe that's what makes networking so difficult. We actually have to be nice.
Yeah. There's a concept.
Someone once asked me, they said, what's the secret to networking? And I looked at them, I said, don't be a jerk. You know, like, seriously.
But, you know, there are so many people that just can't help themselves, you know?
Yeah.
Well, okay, fine. That's great. Just tell me one thing about your career move, because I think it's really cool that you decided to go from being an attorney into venture capital and all kinds of other things. How did that mentally, how did that progress?
I mean, probably the best way to kind of look at all of this is, you know, I practiced law for 11 years, and those, you know, there had been a couple of law firm changes, you know, and moves in that regard. And then the one where I really had to kind of dig in to build the network and make the career change was when I moved from law firm management, moved from practicing law into law firm management. And it was the realization at that point back in 2001, Lynn, that I sort of said, you know, like, shoot, I probably said it with a worse word than shoot, but you know, get my point. Shoot, yeah. I don't have the word of mouth network. Like, I had a great network at the time, but it was very limited. It was really focused on corporate attorneys and bankers. And it was like, unless I wanted to continue doing what I was doing and being in a very narrow area, I would never be able to, you know, sort of expand into this, you know, I was single-minded focus at the time of this one other thing. And after that experience, because it took 18 months to make the career change. Wow. And I had met with probably within 3 or 4 months, pretty much everyone I needed to meet, maybe 6 months, everyone I needed to meet who could possibly help me land this new job. So I had to really, you know, I have to live and follow all my advice and build your dream network, just in case anyone was wondering. I have to do that every day. So I am.
You mean really it's not once and done?
No, unfortunately. It's like sit-ups. You want that washboard stomach. You had to do. So I really had to work, you know, continue to keep that network engaged and keep myself motivated until the opportunity opened and, you know, I landed the job. But after that experience, I said to myself, I'm never making my career so vulnerable again. I'm not going to do that. So I was very intentional in, all right, I'm going to stay in touch with all the bankers and the corporate attorneys and everybody from my first part of my career. I am going to expand and grow my network within, you know, professional development and, you know, women's initiatives within professional services firms. And I'm going to continue to grow that. What else? And I was just very intentional on expanding my network and finding ways to keep it, you know, I'm going to say building the dream network. A dream network for me is one that is diverse and robust and one that has enough of close ties for people who have your back and, you know, the weaker ties of the people you know, used to work with a lot and haven't seen in 10 years. Cause you never know if like I said, my network was very narrow and deep back in 2000, 2001. And unless you want to stay in that little pond, it's not going to get you where you want to go. So once I had done that, that's why, you know, when people look at me and they say, well, okay, how'd you go from being a lawyer? Okay, the lawyer to the manager part in a law firm, kind of get that, right?
Yeah.
Well, how'd you go to becoming the president of 85 Broads? Well, I was active in that network. And Janet offered me a job that didn't exist, you know, because of a phone call. But, you know, I was out and I was visible and I was engaged. And then when, you know, a year later, someone out of 85 Broad said that she had this idea to get more women to be angel investors. And would I sign up for this boot camp she was going to do? I was like, sure, no problem. And then that, you know, all these things just kept cracking open because I now had a network that was not only, you know, narrow and deep in some areas, it was broad and shallow, crossing sectors, crossing titles, crossing geography. And that's where, you know, I want to say the possibility, I put myself in front of possibility because I stay visible. So that's, you know, that's when you sort of wonder, what's the value of posting on LinkedIn? What's the value of, you know, doing a media interview? What's the value of wishing someone a happy birthday on Facebook? All of those little touch points, you know, having an accurate and up-to-date, you know, headshot and profile online, all that kind of stuff kept me visible and people knew what it was that I was interested in. And so all those opportunities just kind of, you know, it's like putting yourself in front of, putting yourself in front of serendipity, because
nice.
I'm there, right? Like,
yes.
People, oh, serendipitous that you, well, you know, so, you know, serendipity was sitting next to the roadie for Anthrax on a flight, you know, could have sat next to anyone else. But, you know, the real serendipity that we want in life for our careers, you got to make that magic happen for yourself.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Completely agree. And I think it's great that people acknowledge that they are responsible for their own life. I mean, in the sense that you can't go back and complain about it was a bad time. You know, we went through the Great Recession, whatever you want to call it. But out of all that, I mean, look at 85 Broads. 85 Broads came out of that whole debacle in 2007, 2008, 2009, and it became actually a breeding ground for wonderful things because of that. So
right.
That's why I say people who look at it like it's blaming something on the outside for how their lives ended up, really go look in the mirror because there's so many opportunities out there.
Well, one of the people I met in the last year, when you know, sort of think about, you know, kind of magical moments, and it was at a book event in Moncton, New Brunswick, and this guy came up to me at the end, and he's, you know, he's in his mid-50s probably, you know, kids who were sort of high school, maybe, you know, one sort of college age, and he'd been laid off from his job after 15 years. And he really appreciated what I had to say, and he sort of like saying, hey, let me tell you this story, because I think I approach, you know, this whole topic the way you do. And he was laid off from his job, and the you know, CEO of the company said to him, you know, take all the time you need to clean out your office. You've been here for 15 years. You're a great guy. Like, you know, I'm sorry that this is happening, that we're downsizing and I got to let you go. But, you know, take the time you need. You don't have to, you know, we're not going to stand here and, you know, tell you have to leave in 20 minutes. And this gentleman looked at the person who had given them this terrible career news in an economic, you know, kind of, you know, kneecapping, because this is a guy who has to go out and get another job. He looked at me and said, no, I'll just be a second. And he walked into his office, as he told me the story. He walked into his office, grabbed his Rolodex. God bless him. He still had a Rolodex. grabbed his Rolodex. And he looked at the boss and said, I've got everything I need. And he walked out.
Wow.
He said to me, Kelly, I know if I have the relationships, and he said, my entire career, I focused on building relationships. He says, I know if I have the relationships, I'll get that next job.
Smart.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
I was like, you know, my poster child, my favorite person, like, here, yes, yes, this is how you ride out the uncertainties in life. You know, if you have relationships.
Well, I have to tell you that's exactly what my husband did. He had two monster size Rolodexes, or would that be Rolodie? I don't know.
I love it.
Anyway, when he went through a tough time, some venture capitalists who decided they didn't like the way the management was going, so they got rid of everybody. But that is exactly what he did. He carried those two Rolodexes in a box and brought them back to the apartment, and he just went through every day. He would go through them, connect with the people, and he landed himself a fabulous job.
Right.
But that's exactly what you're saying. It's the network.
Right. It's a network. How have you been there for them? You know, if your husband just had, you know, a box of business cards that he randomly picked up over the year and said, oh, yeah, I guess I should start reaching out. I can't remember these people. That would be one thing. It's another thing to say, you know what? I have done business and I've worked with these people. They know me. They can vouch for me. They know my character. They can put their reputation on the line for me. Mm-hmm. You know, that's gold. That's absolute gold.
It is indeed. And I think we have to wrap it up here because believe
only
it or
if
not,
you invite only if you invite me back, because I, you know, I can talk to you all day, Lynn.
Well, we can do round two. We can do that. Okay. So thanks to my guest, Kelly Hoey. And Kelly, tell everybody how they can get in touch with you.
You can find me on LinkedIn, and it's Kelly Hoey, H-O-E-Y. You can find me via my website, which has all my social handles on it, and it's jkellyhoey.co. That's .co, not .com. And you can find me on Twitter at J.K. Hoey.
Fabulous. So to all of you in my Power of the Purse community, if you'd like to spend 15 minutes on a call with me and ask me questions about your personal finances, please go to my website, womenofsubstancellc.com, select the contact tab and use the scheduler to find some time that works for you. And thanks again, Kelly, for sharing your time and your knowledge. And until the next time, thanks for listening. And remember, money is not the enemy. Your ignorance of it is. Goodbye.
Thanks again, and join us next time to explore more ways you can take control of your finances and your life.